This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing. I am so happy now to turn to somebody who I made sure that I didn't cook any oatmeal when I was reading this book. And I am so happy to welcome back to Joy on Paper, A.R. Taylor. And the name of the book is Call Me When You're Dead. Hi, A.R.
Hi, Patsy. How are you? It's so lovely to talk to you again. I talked to you in 2020, and this is great.
I know, in the middle of the pandemic. Oh, God.
I know.
It was so terrible, and that's why I had so much fun talking to you, and I had so much fun reading your book at the time, Jenna Takes the Fall, which, as I said, it needed a warning label, because when I started reading it, I couldn't put it down. And there were so many wonderful things about the book that I enjoyed. It has one of the most memorable openings. I remember it. And I didn't let you tell anyone about it, because it was just somebody, people have to read the book to find out. But it's very funny. The prologue is very funny. Well, I mean, it's not supposed to be funny. I mean, we have a dead body, but what the heck? That's what
but
we need.
You know.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. And of course, the wonderful thing for me, I love books set in New York City. And so I was so amused when you were on at the time and you said that you've done two stints in Manhattan, and I always think of that. Not many people call living in Manhattan a stint. We usually use that for going to prison, but I thought it was amusing.
I served my time.
You served your time. You served your time well, and you got a lot out of it, including a lot of good ideas for stories.
True. I mean, New York is just churns out stories every 5 seconds. It's just a place. Well, you know that. Anyone who's been there knows it. And it's so exhausting. When you leave, you say, oh, whew. I'm glad. I love it, but I'm glad to be somewhere that's a little more calm.
Well, and especially nowadays. But back in the day, in the days when you lived there, it was much nicer, and things were much better, I think.
Yeah, I think they were. I think it's changed forever, actually.
It has. The last time I was there was 2019. I was there in 2019, at the beginning of 2019, and I could walk the streets and I didn't feel nervous and I didn't feel, you know, scared or anything. And I love New York City. I love being there.
I do too.
The energy at the time was so great. Although nowadays, I don't know, they have so many offices that are empty. And I know. You know, working with publicists, as I do, so many of them have never returned. they've just...
I know. Well, you know, it's so expensive to live there. It's a hassle when things are going well. And when things are not going well, I mean, look at the subways and the buses. It's really a harsh environment.
But there's always some humor to be found in it, and you certainly got a lot of humor out of in Jenna. I enjoyed it so much. So tell us about the new book. As I said, I love the name of it. It's Call Me When You're Dead, and it's a great cover.
Thank you. I'm very, very pleased with the cover. Well, it's about a young woman who's very lovely, and her friend is in advertising in New York. And our heroine is a medical researcher up in Ithaca. And she comes down to New York, and they have a strange dinner at which her very glamorous friend describes a failing romance and then says, if anything ever happens to me, I want you to get him. Now, our little medical librarian is not suitable for any nefarious doings of any kind, and she just laughs it off because her friend's so glamorous. She thinks, oh, it's just paranoia. You go to New York, you get paranoid and stuff. Well, something does happen to her friend, and she dies as a result of it. And there is a codicil in the will giving our girl $50,000 to pursue what she has asked her to do, which is to find this guy. So she does.
So that sends us on a big adventure with...
And she gets to meet... Sasha, her dead friend, her best friend is an actor, and so he's going to help. She ropes him in. But they have to... Her task is to meet this man, Jonathan Neal, who's in advertising and very, very successful ad agency. And so all of a sudden, she's in the world of advertising, about which she knows zero, except that she doesn't want to hear another ad on, see another ad on TV. and so she chases down this guy. She takes this as a quest, and she goes at something she owes her friend. And so the rest of the book is her basic adventure, encountering this man in advertising and then being sucked into his life. And she doesn't, and all along the notion of getting him is ambiguous. And at some point, because she would never kill anyone, so it's not that. It's how does she get him? Is she going to plot against him? Is she going to, because in the world of advertising, plotting is a daily activity. it's like the school for plots. And you just, she doesn't know if she should mess up something for him or if she should. She just doesn't know what to do because this is not her personality. She is a very straight shooter and a good gal. But Sasha's friend is, the guy is really a kind of devious actor. So he's just about to star in a big play, and so he's going to help her. So together the two of them pursue this man named Jonathan Neal and ultimately corner him when he's shooting a commercial out in Arizona. That's a lot of buffalo wandering around. Well, of course, they don't really wander. They just stand there. And the guy, they put the finger on the guy at LaGuardia Knoll, which is the ad agency. They think they've found the man who engineered the whole thing. And so it's then the comedy of her trying to... She's not obviously not killing anyone, and she's not harming anyone in some terrible physical way. The question is, what does it mean to get someone?
And along the way, of course, she has quite a transformation herself. She has to get into this this world, which is completely different from normal worlds, I can tell you.
And from Ithaca, because no one, not to say anything bad about Ithaca, but it's not a fashion center.
No,
and New York, I love Ithaca, but it's not. It's famous for other things and great research and things like that, but. So our heroine has to go and...
Whose name, by the way, let's just mention, is Eleanor Birch.
Eleanor Birch, who gets her... she gets a complete makeover. She becomes quite glamorous, although she always feels that the inside and the outside don't match at all. She doesn't feel glamorous inside herself. And at some point, she and her cohort, the actor, decide that the key to this all is to seduce this guy. And that's what Sasha meant by get him. They're just not sure. Because his life already seems utterly chaotic. He has had, when she enters the scene and meets the ad guy, one of his ads, a fast food ad for a place called Buffalo Grill, has run like 50 times within an hour and a half on TV. Okay, now you know how ads can... First you think they're delightful, then you think they're snarky, and then suddenly you think they're driving you insane, or there's a message from the Martians in there, or something's gone awry. And really, this becomes a cause célèbre that Buffalo Grill's ad ran like 50 times in this small space of time. So... executives converge on the city and it becomes a big kerfuffle. And Eleanor's right at the center of it. And she feels horribly guilty because she thinks John, the errant boyfriend of Sasha, is going to lose his job and it's going to be bad. And anyway, it evolves the notion of getting him evolved. In the book.
Along the way. And of course, everybody always loves that My Fair Lady, Pygmalion kind of thing where somebody is transformed. It's always an interesting process. And then trying to get somebody to be comfortable in their New York City shoes is not easy because no matter how many times I have been to New York, and there were times when I was visiting, and I would be, in the old days when I was very rich, I would be wearing designer clothes, and I would be, I flew in on the Concorde, for goodness sakes. But it doesn't matter. The New York City people, women, New York City women, I will say, they have an attitude, and it is hard to break into their shell.
No kidding. It's when the first time I had two stints in New York, and the first time I had these two crazy roommates, and they were so nuts. I mean, one of them was in publishing, one of them was in advertising, and I had no idea what they did all day. And I couldn't, the way they would talk about their work, it just sounded like lunches, parties, drinks. Well, clients. The main source of irritation was clients who were bad and were cheating you and were making endless demands, and you had to be on call. I mean, it was worse than being a neurosurgeon. You had to sit by the phone, and, it was, to me, at the time, it just struck me dumb. I mean, I was 19 years old. I just thought, what is it? Who are these people? They're like Martians. I mean, I'm from Ohio. We don't, this whole noisy, on 24-hour-a-day life is just not, it's not normal at all. And that's why the New Yorkers are so, they're the greatest people, but they work so hard.
And it's, they're like electricity, it's like all around them. Whereas I'm from northern Michigan, I'm a Youper, and we're like unplugged. No, we're really unplugged up there.
I know, I used to say I'm wired, but unplugged.
it's so funny. So that's why I always enjoy books that are set in New York. It just takes me to that. Because when I was young, of course, like all Midwestern girls, we all want to go to New York and become famous. In my or to Europe. And in my case, I chose London. And I went there when I was young. But
lucky you.
Yeah, it was great. So that's why I really love this sort of world. I love the insights into the advertising world. Although I do not watch any television ads anymore. Absolutely, I refuse.
Well, seriously?
There's no way I will watch a television ad. I mean, if I don't do it, my favorite shows on streaming, I don't. And I have a show that has commercials. I click them off the minute they come on. I refuse, especially when they started the medical commercials. That was it. I said
that is but I'm so suggestible. I immediately think, do I have that?
Yeah. Well, that's what they want you to do.
I have it.
That's what they want you to do. I feel like that's just it's too much for your mind. You don't need all that stuff in your head. And especially when they started the medical ones and, they tell you, this is really great for you. It's going to cure you. And then at the end, they have this person who talks really fast and says, but on the other hand, it could do and suicide and then depression. And then
I know that list of things you might get.
Oh, yeah, I hate that.
Oh, it's terrible. And you think, wait, I might get at least one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's such a long list. Well, I was married to someone in advertising, and he was very successful. And the gift from his ad agency was that they became famous for doing very, very high quality ads for computer companies. And so the guys who worked there were ahead of the curve, in terms of what was coming next in the computer world. And me, I'm trailing edge. I'm the last one to know about anything. And, you know, it was fascinating, but it was, my perception was that the business drove these poor people crazy. It just, you had to work 24 hours a day, and now with all our computers and our notices and this, I mean, we could be working just 29 hours a day. I mean, you know, we could.
Well, you know,
it's not good for the soul.
No, it's not. And that's one of the things I like about the book, why I wanted to mention Eleanor Birch's name, is that birch trees are my favorite trees. And as a child, my whole life in the summer was centered around a hammock tied between two birch trees. And I would, that's where I would read. When I say, you know, when I tell people that, you know, I read 10,000 books before I even started this program, I would say a couple thousand were read in that hammock between birch trees. And there is nothing like the sound of the wind in a birch tree. It's like no other sound. I mean, I've traveled all over the world into all sorts of countries, and I've been to, in jungles and all sorts of places, but nothing sounds like the wind in a birch tree.
Well, now, you know, I'm not sure. I'm sure I have heard it, but I don't know if I'd recognize. So after we get off, I'm going to go listen to some birch trees.
As a matter of fact, they have a video. It's 1 hour.
Oh, yeah.
You can listen to it on YouTube, and I have it, and every once in a while, especially on a Sunday morning, I will turn on that and listen for an hour to a birch tree.
Are you kidding? That is such a nice story.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing to do. You just sit back in your most comfortable chair and put that YouTube video on, and you go to a different world. That's a real treasure. So everybody should do that. And if I'm a great believer in going outdoors to read. So anybody with a backyard should have a comfortable chair out there so they can read.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, I love reading outside too. And there's always a breeze. I'm in Southern California, but where I am, there's always a breeze. So it's not that brutal. That brute heat.
Yeah.
That's around the rest of the state.
So, talking about California, I found it interesting that you've played in some comedy clubs.
Oh, yes. But it was not stand up. I did stand up. But it was fortunately, because I could never be that person who just makes jokes. But I did a number of short humor pieces. And I had a lot of success. Actually, I read one in New York, the Gotham Comedy Club. And I must, every time I read a short comedy piece, I must lose 28 pounds. I mean, sweating and nerves. And that's me reading something. So imagine, I mean, I can't imagine what stand-up comics go through, but... I have done a fair amount of that. I mean, I read a piece called My Beautiful Tax Return. And I had a great old time. I really got into it. In fact,
Well, I think it's great. Well, I think it's some of your interest in humor comes through. And as I said, when I was reading Jenna Takes the Fall, what's the boxy box one?
Say again.
The pancake one.
Oh, the pancake one. I'm blanking.
And Jenna Takes
that
the Fall.
Was an account.
Yep. Yeah.
Jenna Takes the Fall. The pancake.
Well, I'll have to go
back on another book.
And I'll have to go back and look at it. As I said, I enjoyed that book so much, and I want to remind people, too, that it was the 2021 Reader's Favorite Book Award, Bronze Medal in Fiction, right?
I know. I was very, very excited about it.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was definitely exciting. I mean, you know, you build up such a head of steam about these books, and you know, while I've, I mean, call mean, When You're Dead is just publishing as of today, and but I'm already onto another book and deep into like the fourth rewrite. So it's you know, you're often off onto another project by the time your first another project comes through. So you're just like, wait, who's that? Was she in? Which book was she in? Well, I'm not sure, but she certainly did do something. You know, but I do see fiction as very grounded in geography. Like, I think, I mean, Jenna Takes the Fall was obviously a New York book, and so is Call Me When You're Dead. And reliving and creating, trying to understand a world that is really foreign to you, I think is a fascinating thing to do. But where you live, I mean, I tend to write about places where I've lived and try to figure out what's the key to it. Because I believe geography really does.
Oh, yes. A place can really...
Well, like your birch trees. Yeah.
Yeah, it takes on a character of its own in a book. And New York is always such a powerful character in a book.
It is, and especially, you know, during the pandemic, I've been thinking, because I still have friends in New York, and I talk to them, and I mean, it just became a ghost town.
Yeah.
And can you imagine that? And it also became 100% quieter. I think of New York as just noisy all the time, especially at night. But no, all gone.
I know. The atmosphere has certainly changed. But I like stories that give us the energetic New York, and I don't want any pandemic-y New York books. I got quite a few, actually.
No. And this our heroine in Call Me When You're Dead, she sets out to get this advertising guy, and she's immediately plunged into his life, and he's crazy, you know, they'll be having a meeting talking about burger patio ratios of the bun.
Yeah, there's...
You know, how big is the patty related to the bun? And could we shrink the patty? You know, questions that, as you wander through life, you're not exactly... focusing on that, unless it's your business, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I mean, I guess that's one thing I observed about New Yorkers is they're so focused on their businesses and careers that it's kind of stupefying, but it you can learn from it.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned editing. What is your process? You know, so many of my listeners did take my advice and during the pandemic start writing. And as the last 3 or 4 months, I've had quite a few of them, you know, contact me and say, oh, thank you, Patsy. I finally, after 30 years, started writing my book. I finished it. I didn't think the pandemic would last so long. One person said, I finished 2 books.
You could do a library here with this stuff. I mean, yeah.
Exactly. But then they always, quite a few of them say, well, now I'm ready to publish. I have to sort of wake them up to reality that that's not quite how it goes.
Right.
So what do you find with the editing process? Do you have an editor that you work with who takes you through things? What's your editing process?
Yes. I don't have one specific dedicated editor, but I have, from She Writes, I have a couple of editors, and I think they're brilliant. I really do. I'm so impressed. I mean, they catch all sorts of things that I would never catch. I also think the editing process really, and it's pretty extensive. I mean, I do, before I ever submit a book, I, you know, have one of my friends who's, a person who has an editorial background, and I say, please look at this and, you know, give me a shout when I need something else. But when you're dealing with professional editors, I just think it's a joy because you learn. I mean, I'm assuming that they basically like your book and want you to succeed, which I think when you talk to people who are with the huge publishers, sometimes Well, I'm sure it's the same at any publisher. They want you to succeed. It's just that the hoops you have to go through are different depending on where you are. And I think it's a great process because you learn. You have a fresh pair of eyes who has really no skin in the game, just in terms of your story. So you get a very laser-focused view of, does the story hold up? How does it work? Is this episode make any sense whatsoever, or are we just drifting hopelessly through the ether? And I find it really stimulating, especially if you put... My friends always say, my writer friends always say, well, put the manuscript on your desk and let it sit there for, like, 2 months. Well, that's too long for me. I can't do that. I have to give it to a couple of trusted readers just to say, okay, tell me what's happening with this. But I think it's as you go through and you get more professional, and then you get professional editors whom you don't know at all, and they don't know you, so they don't care if they're offending you. And it's so stimulating to hear what they have to say because, in a sense, you know, when you write a novel, which is long, you become buried in it, kind of. You know, you may not see things that don't make sense. And I just think it's really stimulating. And I think it's you have to assume that your editor is acting in good faith and goodwill, which has always been my experience. And I'm sure it's most authors' experience. I mean, they complain constantly, especially the famous writers complain about this. But it really does make the work better. It just does. And you have to just, you know, as my daughter would say, just suck it up. You know, I mean, you know, you do. You have to be open to, you must respond to certain criticisms and see, you don't have to accept them all. But, you know, it's a very, especially if you work hard, you know, a novel takes at least, what, by the time you submit it to someplace, 2 years, and usually way longer, it's been cooking around in your head. So you know, you're not as objective about it as you might be. It's not like picking up a novel at the store and saying, oh, gee, this looks interesting. And it's wonderful. It's a wonderful experience. It's like, because a fresh pair of eyes. I mean, it always, you know, and same with reviewers. When reviewers give me reviews and stuff, you learn. I mean, even if, you know, they say something nasty, which happily they haven't said much like that to me, but, you know, you occasionally, and you realize, yeah, but this is, you got to take this in, you know, you got to.
You learn from it. You learn from it.
Yeah, you learn. And it's a craft. It's not, you know, they say it's an art. It's a craft. It's, you're like, you know, you got to learn how to pull that string through that piece of paper. You're, you know, and I mean, it was a dream in my life to do this. And it took me a long time to be able to do it because I couldn't afford it. I knew I wasn't going to be able to. You know, you're not going to start out and make lots of money as a novelist. I mean, this would not be a ticket to wealth. And so you have to be prepared, you know, for that. And happily, even though I wish I'd started earlier, but happily it pays off to be, you know, to have some other jobs under your belt so you know that there's a real world out there.
Well, all your life experiences come into what you write eventually. So everything that you've done, every job that you've held, every trip that you've made, somehow works into that whole process of writing.
Exactly. And it's you don't realize, like occasionally I'll give a book to one of my friends and they will recognize an incident that happened maybe 20 years ago, and they'll say, oh, gee, I'd forgotten about that totally, which is so interesting when that happens. You know, you think, oh, you become this little repository. I'm sure all authors tell you this, but when you're at a party or you meet some new person and you're talking, you know right away when they said something that you can use or a story. You know, they'll say, oh, this happened to me. I recognize, you know, this and this. I want to tell you what happened to me the other day. And it's the way doctors, you walk into a doctor's office and the patient says, oh, well, he says, how are you feeling? And then you just start blathering on about every single thing you've ever had. And when you're at a party and someone says, oh, gee, And I said, well, tell me, what have you been doing, or what? How did you get your start in your job? And then you just hear their entire life, you know.
Yeah.
And because I think the author develops, all authors, a receptivity to any story that people care to tell you. If they care enough to look you in the eye and say, listen, this is what happened to me. And you don't, I mean, it's the rare author, unless he's doing some sort of documentary style book. You're not going to reproduce what this person said to you, but you're going to listen and think about that person's life. I'm like, wow, that's interesting. You know, that's something that I haven't done, and I don't know anything about it. And if that is the cool thing, is that you're always learning, and you're learning on your feet, because you never know. And I've got this theory that when you're a fiction writer, people, somehow they can sense that they can just tell you everything. And you won't, you're not being judgmental, you're not saying, oh dear, you're a horrible person. You're there listening, and they love it.
They do.
And they'll tell you, they'll just start saying, oh, you do something with books. I'm sure you get hundreds of people who just say, oh. And then all of a sudden you're deep in the middle of some fascinating story that you wouldn't have met this person, you wouldn't have really known what they're talking about, and it's just neat. I mean, that's the neatest thing about it, is that you are learning.
Exactly. Well, writing, when you become a writer and you find this joy on paper, one of the things is getting these stories from people, and then, of course, doing research. Research just is so marvelous, and you meet so many interesting people along the way when you're doing research.
I know.
There are so many great things. Now, with this book, well, with both books, with the new book, as I said, I mentioned the cover. Did your publisher select the cover, or do you have an input into the cover?
Yes, I have input. Yes, the publisher suggests. Well, they ask me my ideas about the cover. Do I have any vision for the cover? Now, with Jenna Takes the Fall, I had the swimming pool image because some adventures of hers take place in the swimming pool. Now, in Call Me When You're Dead, I didn't, they went to work on it really, really fast. The other one, Jenna Takes the Fall, took much longer. With this one, I said, well, I sort of envision maybe someone with binoculars and maybe some indication of New York City, because this is very much a fish out of water story, a girl coming into the big city. And they came up with this cover so fast.
It's very clever.
I just love it. And if you see the girl, is our heroine, has got her binoculars and she's looking at the skyscrapers in Manhattan.
I saw that. They put the reflection of the skyscraper. Very clever. It was so good that I was impressed. It was almost like a cover that would have been done by one of the Penguin cover artists, who are like the best in the world.
I know.
It's really great.
The other thing I love is, did you see the little binoculars on the back cover and on the spine?
Uh-huh.
If you look at and they're so cute.
It's adorable.
Thinking,
it is.
Now that is really.
And the skyline and the top of every chapter, very clever. Well, I just want to thank you so much, A.R. Taylor. And I want
thank to, you, and you are increasing my joy daily.
And I want to tell people first to get the new book called Call Me When You're Dead, and then go back and get Jenna Takes the Fall. And you have a nice website. I love your website. It's called
LoneCamel.com.
And
I know what's with the camel.
I know it's adorable. I love it. Great. Great. It's really good. And they can find out more about you and what you're up to. And AR.
Thank you, Patsy.
Okay. Look forward to talking to you pretty soon, okay?
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.